It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
One of China's most prominent and best-connected CEOs vanishes, probably into Chinese custody. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. The head of one of China's most high-profile companies, the real estate conglomerate Anbang, is no longer running his company, and just where he might be now has riveted China's business community today. Let's switch now to Beijing, where we find BBC reporter Stephen McDonnell, and he's been following this. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what happened to Anbang's chairman and chief executive officer here?
Well, the truth is we don't know. There was a report in a respected financial magazine that Wu Xiaohui had been plucked off the streets and is being detained. But his company has put out an official statement saying that he's unable to continue his duties due to personal reasons. But the suggestion seems to have been from this magazine report, which incidentally has now been censored in China, is that he might have been picked up by anti-corruption investigators here. And if that's the case, it would all be secret. And that's why we wouldn't have heard anything from the police, say, or prosecutors, because it's a Communist Party Discipline Inspection Commission investigation, and they keep these things very secret.
He was a flamboyant figure. I mean, he's a CEO. A lot of CEOs are flamboyant, but he did stand out.
If he has been grabbed by the discipline inspection investigators, it's an enormous thing. I mean, Anbang Insurance is an absolute giant here. I mean, it's been going on a global spending spree recently, including taking over the Waldorf Astoria in New York. It had been in talks with a Kushner company over redevelopment of 666 Fifth Avenue. But it doesn't seem to matter in today's China how powerful you are. You can still be nabbed by these investigators. I mean, another example of how incredible it is, he's married to former Chinese leader Deng Xiaoping's granddaughter, and yet even that protection hasn't been enough for him, it seems. And so the message really going out is that, you know, it doesn't matter who you are in China, it doesn't matter how good your family connections are, it doesn't matter whether or not you're the chairman of an enormous and powerful company, you can still be caught up in this anti-corruption crackdown.
The BBC's Stephen McDonnell in Beijing. Checking numbers, the FTSE in London is up 0.5%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up this morning, plus 24 points for the Dow future. An update this morning on the big corporate culture gone wrong story of 2017. The culture at the $70 billion car service known as Uber. By midday yesterday, we had the recommendations by former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder for fixing Uber's culture of abuse. That was Tuesday. The Wednesday story here is that an Uber board member was forced to resign from the board last night after he made a sexist crack at the all-staff meeting to talk about sexism and harassment over the weekend. David Bonderman, who's a hedge fund guy, apparently believes women talk a lot as an entire gender. Here's the moment leaked to Yahoo Finance when board member Arianna Huffington is making a point and Bonderman chimes in.
And there is a lot of data that shows that when there is one woman on the board, it's much more likely that there will be a second woman on the board.
Actually, what it shows is it's much likely to be more talking.
Oh, come on, David.
The nervous laughter there 2 days later resolved into an apology from Bonderman, who then, last evening, resigned from the board. Hi, David Brancaccio, stepping out of my anchorman role for a second. Marketplace is here because these days I think it's essential to have an independent source exploring how the economy really works, not just for the market participants or the financial geniuses, but for everyone. Your support keeps our kind of reporting coming, and it is especially vital now at the end of our fiscal year. If you could, visit marketplace.org/donate to contribute and to keep us on the beat. Thank you. The U.S. economy is statistically strong, but at the same time, fewer young people are seeking work than in previous decades. Now, some of this may be retail, which is not hiring like it used to. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Franklin High School graduated class of 2017. It's graduation day at Franklin High, a big urban high school in Portland, Oregon. The newly minted graduates mill around afterward in their maroon caps and gowns, hugging friends and posing for family photos. For many, like 18-year-old Jack Morgan, thoughts are also turning to what comes next.
Work, video, hopefully, video production.
Do you have a job already?
No, not currently.
You confident?
Absolutely.
Ah, the confidence of youth. But teens today really are in a good place, with more jobs available and fewer unemployed people to compete with than at any time since the early 2000s. Amy Byers is the mother of an 11th grader. She's also a hiring manager for a local hotel. She says her first job in high school was selling clothing for teens at a local mall. But these days,
people buy on the internet, so those shops are coming obsolete, and those jobs are also harder to get because once those teenagers get them, they keep them versus where before it might just be a summer job or something like that.
Andrew Challenger tracks retail layoffs and store closures at outplacement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas.
We've seen quite a bit of cutting from brick-and-mortar stores, and it's a trend that we expect to see in the future.
So what summer jobs are teens finding? Here are some more of those Franklin High grads. 18-year-old Yvonne Garcia will be making $12 an hour.
I'm going to work with Portland Public Schools, teacher assistant. I want to become a social worker.
And how hard was it to get a job?
It wasn't really that hard because I got involved with the community a lot.
Michael Elliott, I'm going to be coaching our youth football team.
You got paid for that?
I don't think so, but I just like doing it because I love football.
And, okay, even in its current e-commerce besieged decline, brick-and-mortar retail's not dead. Along with fast food, it's still a viable option for some, like 18-year-old Bao Li.
I'm going to stay at my convenience store job. It's like what a teen can get in this day and age. There are moments where I like customer service job, but most of the time it's hell. People my age, a lot of them just like to just study more than they like to work. I have to pay for my own living expense.
In the 1970s, well over half of 16 to 19-year-olds were in the workforce. Today, with more unpaid internships and summer study programs, that percentage has fallen to 1 in 3. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
With the Federal Reserve meeting today on interest rates, the 10-year yield is down slightly, 2.19% right now. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio, and we're from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.